The investigators stepped onto the quiet Santa Barbara property just after sunrise, their focus on a man who had once been celebrated as both a tech pioneer and a trusted spiritual figure. They carried early financial records that showed signals of trouble, but the real questions were still open. Reed Slatkin had built an investment circle that looked simple and friendly. It appeared to grow from personal trust, shared faith, and a reputation that seemed beyond doubt. Inside the house, the first boxes of documents waited. Some files looked polished, others looked improvised. The pattern was unclear. What drew attention was the number of people involved and the total amount of money that had moved through accounts that did not match the story he had been telling for years. By the time agents began sorting the earliest statements, an uneasy picture formed. It raised a hard question. How had a network built on shared belief turned into one of the country's largest private investment failures before anyone realized what was happening? Chapter 1, The Circle of Trust. The agents entered the Santa Barbara property with a clear sense of purpose. The questions around Reed Slatkin had grown too large to ignore. Early files showed delays in payments and missing trade records. The house was calm, but the paper trail suggested pressure had been building for years. Reed Slatkin's public story began long before this moment. He had helped create Earthlink in the mid-1990s and gained attention as the company expanded. Within Scientology, he was seen as a member who had achieved both financial success and spiritual credibility. This image helped him draw people toward what he called an investment club. It was presented as a simple way for friends and family to benefit from his supposed market skill. The club grew quietly. Investors sent money based on personal referrals. Many trusted him because of shared faith. Early statements showed positive returns. The numbers looked steady and safe. The documents carried a tone of confidence. When investors called for updates, they reported calm explanations and reassurance from Slatkin. The timeline from the mid-1990s outward showed a pattern of rising deposits. There was no public promotion. The club moved on reputation alone. Inside the documents were summaries of market positions that were difficult to support with verifiable trades. Many investors did not ask for details because they believed he was handling everything responsibly. By the late 1990s, some small cracks appeared. A few investors waited longer than usual to receive withdrawals. Questions developed quietly. They asked for updated statements. They asked why the delays continued. Slatkin repeated explanations about market timing and administrative issues. These calls did not reach wider attention. Each concern stayed contained to private conversations. The first official signs of trouble came when the Securities and Exchange Commission requested documents. The request was simple. They wanted to understand the nature of the club and confirm its legitimacy. Slatkin responded with paperwork that looked organized at a distance. A closer review raised concerns. The records showed general summaries instead of specific trades. The accounts listed broad positions but lacked detailed confirmations. Agents reviewing these early files noted that the paperwork relied heavily on personal statements rather than third-party records. Many pages looked copied and reused. Some looked handwritten and unclear. The mix suggested a system that grew faster than Slatkin could support. It also pointed to conduct that needed verification. Reed Slatkin's story within Scientology added another layer. He had built a reputation as someone who understood both business and spiritual responsibility. Friends viewed him as stable and disciplined. Investors described feeling honored when invited to join his circle. This level of trust made the club operate more like a spiritual network than a financial enterprise. Members believed that involvement meant access to something safe and guided. As federal interest increased, files were gathered from multiple locations. Statements, letters, and internal notes revealed how he spoke about the club. He used phrases about long-term planning and careful risk. He suggested that his experience allowed him to manage the market without exposing clients to stress. Many investors accepted this without evidence. The shared belief system meant that fewer people asked for independent verification. Investigators studying the early timeline saw a single central question forming. How had this informal circle grown into a large financial structure without standard oversight? There were no registrations. There were no audited reports. The entire system rested on trust between individuals who believed they were supporting one another through both financial and spiritual bonds. By the time the chapter closed on the initial evidence, investigators understood that they were looking at more than a simple reporting issue. The size of the deposits, the lack of clear custodial accounts, and the growing tension around delayed withdrawals pointed toward something larger. The case shifted from basic inquiry to a deeper evaluation of the entire operation. The final question hanging over the initial timeline was straightforward. If the early documents could not confirm real investments, what exactly had been happening with the money entrusted to Reed Slatkin? Chapter 2, The Cracks in the Story. Investigators moved into the next phase with a clearer view of the scale of the operation. The investor list was long. Many names came from Scientology communities in California. They described Slatkin as someone they trusted because he appeared disciplined and spiritually aligned. His status gave him an authority that made financial questions feel unnecessary. People believed they were helping each other through a shared network. As interviews began, agents reached out to early participants in the club. Some spoke openly about their confidence in Slatkin. They said his success at Earthlink proved he understood markets. Others said his spiritual standing carried weight. They wanted a steady place to grow their savings. A few spoke about life changes they expected from long-term returns. These conversations showed how deeply the trust had taken hold. Victim profiles revealed a consistent pattern. Many were artists, actors, and business owners who hoped for stable income. Several described joining after hearing positive reports from friends inside their congregation. They saw it as an opportunity connected to someone who lived by the same spiritual rules. They felt protected by the shared identity. This sense of community reduced skepticism. It also made early warning signs harder to discuss. The financial tracing work shifted the tone of the case. Investigators followed the flow of money through the accounts Slatkin controlled. They expected to find trading activity. Instead, they found incoming deposits from new investors and outgoing payments to older ones. The flow looked circular. No verified trades supported the returns. Analysts searched for third-party confirmations and found none. This gap became a turning point. As agents continued interviews, contradictions appeared. Slatkin had described a strategy based on careful market analysis. He spoke about managing long-term positions and protecting capital. When questioned directly about specific trades, he gave broad explanations that did not match the records. Some investors said he avoided details and asked them to trust the long view. These statements raised new doubts about the underlying system. In mid-timeline documents, payments slowed. Investors who depended on monthly withdrawals began asking harder questions. Inside Scientology circles, private conversations surfaced. Members wondered why friends were waiting for funds they were told were secure. This wave of concern signaled that the club was under strain. The shared trust that had protected Slatkin for years began to break down. The financial forensics team examined spreadsheets, wire transfers, and bank statements. Their work mirrored lab analysis in a traditional forensic case. They searched for any sign of independent custodial accounts. They found inconsistencies in balances reported to investors. Some statements displayed numbers that did not match account histories. These discoveries added pressure. The club's foundation no longer appeared sustainable. Interviews continued as investors tried to understand the delays. Some described emotional strain. They said Slatkin reassured them that markets were complex and timing was sensitive. These conversations showed the difference between belief and verification. As more people came forward, investigators gained a clearer picture. Slatkin's explanations did not align with objective records. The turning point arrived when investigators asked for documentation proving that specific trades had ever occurred. Slatkin struggled to provide details. He referenced market conditions and long-term strategies. He did not present third-party confirmations. The absence of these details signaled that the story he had told investors could not hold. Inside the investigative team, the question shifted. They no longer asked whether irregularities existed. They now asked how long the system had operated without real investment activity. The data pointed to a large gap between what investors believed and what the documents proved. As pressure mounted, more investors reported stalled withdrawals. People who had considered Slatkin a trusted figure began to realize that something was fundamentally wrong. For years, the club had been protected by personal relationships. Now, those relationships fueled urgency as members sought answers. The chapter closed with an unsettled question. If the flow of money came entirely from new deposits, how large had the circle grown, and how much damage remained unseen? Chapter 3, Collapse and Reckoning. The final stage of the investigation brought together months of financial tracing, interviews, and document review. Analysts aligned bank records with investor statements. The result confirmed what many had begun to fear. There were no real trades. The system had functioned for years by moving deposits from new participants to older ones. The flow showed the classic structure of a Ponzi scheme built inside a network of personal and spiritual trust. The break in the case occurred when the Securities and Exchange Commission and the Federal Bureau of Investigation compared their findings. Both agencies reached the same conclusion. The investment club had never operated as a legitimate trading program. The records showed that money placed under Slatkin's control was not invested. It was redistributed to keep the appearance of growth. This discovery ended any remaining uncertainty. The collapse spread quickly. Investors who had spent years believing in steady returns learned that their savings no longer existed. Many described disbelief. They trusted Slatkin because of his standing in their community. They believed his history with Earthlink meant he carried a level of knowledge that others lacked. When the truth emerged, the sense of betrayal was deep and personal. Formal actions followed. Investigators secured warrants. They gathered remaining documents and prepared charges. In court, Slatkin entered a plea that confirmed the core facts of the scheme. The proceedings detailed losses in the hundreds of millions of dollars. These figures became part of the public record. Victims described how the collapse affected their families, businesses, and plans for the future. The bankruptcy trustee began the long process of tracing remaining assets. The goal was recovery, but the available funds could not match the scale of the losses. For many investors, the outcome meant accepting that the money they had entrusted to Slatkin would not return. The trustee's reports outlined how repayments were distributed and how the estate was handled over time. Inside Scientology communities, the aftermath carried its own weight. Members who had joined the club because of shared belief faced difficult conversations. Some felt pressure not to blame internal networks. Others said the case proved the need for independent financial checks. The event forced a reflection on how trust systems can amplify risk when skepticism is discouraged. Public reaction grew as media coverage placed the case in the larger category of affinity fraud. Experts explained how schemes flourish inside groups where members share identity, belief, or mission. The Slatkin case showed how reputation can become a shield that hides warning signs. It also showed how victims can feel isolated when they question someone seen as a respected figure. The final records of the case documented admissions made during the plea. They confirmed the absence of real trading activity, the continuous use of new deposits to pay earlier participants, and the scale of the losses. These proven facts formed the legal foundation of the outcome. They also answered the central question investigators posed at the start. The investment club had no investment structure behind it. In the closing phase, community members reflected on the lessons. They spoke about trust, accountability, and the importance of independent verification. Some described the emotional impact of discovering that spiritual and financial confidence had been used to support a false narrative. This reflection extended beyond the immediate victims. It became part of broader discussions about fraud prevention inside affinity groups. The story ends with a clear understanding. The collapse of the investment club was not only a financial failure. It was a breakdown of a trust system built over many years. It carried a cost that reached into personal relationships, community identity, and long-term plans. The final takeaway raised a lasting question. How can communities built on shared belief protect themselves when trust becomes so strong that it replaces caution?